One of the things I wanted to start off with was I wanted to kind of set up a little bit of, I think it brings a little deeper context for Mark's sermon. There was an interesting article that I read, I found, and it wasn't from a theologian. It was a pastor in Canada. And the title of the article was basically, "Why are people siding with Pharaoh?" And it was kind of, "Why are Christians siding with Pharaoh?" I'm not going to read the whole article, but there's a couple of things I wanted to read to you, because I think it sort of sets some context before we jump into Mark's sermon. One question he raises in the article is, why do I suspect that many believers today would have opposed Moses? Well, that's an interesting question. Why do I suspect that many believers today would have opposed Moses? How many of you feel like that's real possible? Why? Jim?
They didn't have faith.
Okay.
Moses deserved to already get killed somebody. So
yeah.
He was a murderer, so why should we follow this man that's not even, you know, following, you know, what he's saying God has done?
Yeah. Yeah. We've heard almost the same, haven't we, from some of these, especially, I won't pick on just college students, but some of the college students that they've, you know, we've seen on the news about the Hamas and all that kind of stuff, and it's amazing. You know, someone will throw out the idea of cutting off babies' heads and that kind of thing, and they will just whitewash right over it, right? They just won't even address that. Here's what he said to that question. He said, yes, sadly, they certainly exist. There are way too many believers today who, if they lived back at the time of the Exodus, as recorded in Exodus 1 through 15, would actually have sided with the pagan Pharaoh and stood against God's chosen leader, Moses. They would have happily submitted to the dictates of Pharaoh while accusing Moses of being a troublemaker who should just sit down and shut up. But his last element of his article I thought was interesting, and I'd read this before, and maybe you've read it too. It's alarming what it says, but it was a quote from a resistant leader, a Christian guy, actually a Jewish gentleman who was a resistant leader. He also became a student of the Jewish Torah and all that, and became a priest of some sort, rabbi. But he famously said this: in Germany, they came first for the communist, and I didn't speak up because I wasn't a communist. Then they came for the Jews, and I didn't speak up because I wasn't a Jew. Then they came for the trade unionist, and I didn't speak up because I wasn't a trade unionist. Then they came for the Catholics, and I didn't speak up because I was a Protestant. Then they came for me. By that time, no one was left to speak up. That's kind of an interesting thought process, isn't it, for that? You know, when we looked at, obviously, Mark's talking about the Pharaoh at the time when Moses came and did all the works of God and all that. Mark made this comment early in the sermon, and you may have caught it, you may not have caught it, but he said there were like seven or eight, several Pharaohs that are recorded in the Bible. And we have, what I found in doing some research this week was about eight of them. And let me share with you the eight that are script and their scriptures for each one of these. There was a Pharaoh, and remember, Pharaoh's not the name of a person, right? It's the name of a title, king. The one who took Sarah from Abraham, remember that one? That was in Genesis 12. The one who reigned when Joseph was prime minister in Genesis 37, and then chapters 40 through 50. There was a Pharaoh who was king of Egypt when Moses was born, and whose palace Moses was brought up in, Exodus 1 and 2. There's then the Pharaoh who was king when Moses was fully grown, Exodus 2. The one who persecuted the Israelites and whom Moses and Aaron challenged, that's in Exodus 3, 4, and 22. The one who reigned in the days of Solomon and whose daughter Solomon married. Forget about her, I always forgot about that one. Seventh, the one who was king in the days of Isaiah 19 and 30. And then the one who was father of Bithiah, a wife of Mered of the tribe of Judah. And that's in 1 Chronicle 4. And I didn't even know of that one. I just had never even heard of that one before. So I thought that was interesting. I just wanted to share that with you a little bit. And so we have this situation where when Mark jumps in, where we actually have the battle going back and forth with Locust and all that kind of stuff. But it was interesting. I found an interesting theologian who wrote that if Moses and Aaron had been privileged to listen to Jonathan Edwards preach his famous sermon, Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God, they probably would have shouted amen when Edwards said, "All the kings of the earth before God are as grasshoppers. They are nothing and less than nothing. Both their love and their hatred is to be despised. The wrath of the King of Kings is as much more terrible than theirs as his majesty is greater." And so the point is that he's talking about, if Edwards in his sermon said, if Moses and Aaron had heard that they would have been more emboldened, and they would have been more strengthened by going before Moses. Well, or before the Pharaoh. Well, let's open up our Bible. Let's get into Exodus. Let's go ahead and turn over to Exodus so we can have that as our base camp today. And one of the things that I wanted to hit early was also is that Mark made the comment that he said that Pharaoh practiced systematic genocide. We hear the word systematic a lot today. Systematic genocide. I didn't know what exactly that meant. I could guess what it meant. But here's the definition of it. Genocide is defined as any of the following acts committed with intent to destroy, in whole or in part, national, ethnic, racial, or religious group. Here's how it does. You can have genocide by just simply killing members of the group. That would be an example. Causing serious body or mental harm to members of the group. Here we go. Deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. Remember when Mark talked about forcing the babies and when they were born, the boys to kill them, right? Basically to drown them. Imposing measures intended to prevent births within the group. And forcibly transferring children to the group to another group. So these were all examples, and three of those probably very clearly were things that Pharaoh was using in trying to master the Jews there in Egypt. So I thought that might be of interest to you in that regard. So Mark shared with us about that. Look with me, if you would. Exodus, let's go back to Exodus chapter 1. Someone read verses 9 and 10 there. 9 and 10. Chapter 1.
And he said to the people, "Behold, the people of Israel are too many and too mighty for us. Come, let us deal shrewdly with them, lest they multiply. And if war breaks out, they join our enemies and fight against us and escape from our land."
Yeah, so what are we reading about there? He's afraid they're going to take over. In fact, let's go one step further. Don, since you got it, move down to verse 22 in the same chapter 1. Read that verse for us.
Then Pharaoh commanded all the people, "Every son that is born to the Hebrews, you shall cast into the Nile, but you shall let every daughter live."
Now, here's what's interesting. Most of us go back to about go back to verse 15. "Then the king of Egypt," that's Pharaoh, "said to the Hebrew midwives," here we go, "one of whom was named Shiphrah and the other Puah, when you serve as midwife to the Hebrew women and see them on the birth stool, if it is a son, you shall kill him. But if it is a daughter, she shall live." Now, I doubt seriously if the two midwives were servicing all of the females in the Hebrews that were living there, right? So I got a feeling that maybe these were, I don't know, nurse managers, executive nurses, right? For this process. And so they probably oversaw other midwives that were performing those duties. But it's interesting. What do we find in the next verse? What happened? What does Pharaoh realize?
He didn't realize that they were God-fearing.
Bingo. But the midwives feared God and did not do as the king of Egypt commanded them, but let the male children live. So the bottom line is, these midwives who believe in Jehovah are not buying into it. They're resisting government rules. And so what does Pharaoh have to do in the end? Now go back. Don, read that verse one more time. Verse 22.
Then Pharaoh commanded all the people, every son that is born to the Hebrews, you shall cast into the Nile, but you shall let every daughter live.
So what is that an open decry for? What is Pharaoh giving all citizens of Egypt the right to do? Mercy killing, or not mercy killing, just killing. Right? Mm-hmm. Well, if you go back with one of the things that Mark made the comment that there are people today even that will fight that, especially early. Help me out. Early in the sermon, he talks about, today in liberal theology, they say that the difference is that in the Old Testament, they portray God as he is understood by primitive people, and the New Testament reflects man's evolution in his understanding. Do you remember him talking kind of like that? Well, I've got something for you. Turn over to Romans. Turn over to the book of Romans. Let's see if I'm right on this. Let's see here. Mark gives us the verse that they're kind of basing it on is in Romans. Following the laws of the land. I think it's Romans 7. Okay. Someone read in Romans chapter 7. Someone read verse 7. Let's see. Hold on a second. Well, let me go ahead and read. I'm going to start in verse 4. Likewise, my brothers, you also have died to the law through the body of Christ, so that you may belong to another, to him who has been raised from the dead, in order that we may bear fruit for God. For while we were living in the flesh, our sinful passions aroused by the law were at work in our members to bear fruit for death. Then drop down to verse 7. What then shall we say? That the law is sin? By no means. Yet if it had been for the law, I would not have known sin, for I would not have known what it is to covet if the law had not said, you shall not covet. But sin, seizing an opportunity through the commandment, produced in me all kinds of covetousness. For apart from the law, sin lies dead. I was once alive apart from the law, but when the commandment came, sin came and died. Now, he's talking about the Ten Commandments, basically, right there. But in Romans, Paul also talks about being a follower of the state that you live in other words, following the rules of the state or of your government. Are we held to that in this country? Should we follow the laws of our own land? Yeah. What might cause us not to follow? If we're against God's laws, right? And so we have this, we have people who are or play Christianity against us by saying, well, God commands us not to kill other people. So the Israelis, for instance, now should not be going into Gaza and killing all these people through their bombings and that kind of stuff, right? How do you address that? If someone brought that up to you at a conversation challenging you, how would you answer that?
It's not hard.
It's defense?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, then shouldn't it be we shouldn't kill more than what they killed of Israelis, right?
You have to make them succumb to your will.
It's war.
Kill them all.
Well, there's a guy that pulled the trigger. Yeah?
I got a big one.
Well, what's that?
It might happen.
It might happen. Exactly right. Yeah. That's right. Let's see. I don't think I want to share. Go ahead, Dave.
God has commanded many times for them for the Jews to go in with this, to go in and annihilate another group.
Right.
I mean, so it's...
And part of the problem is they're dealing with people that they live when God gave them the promised land. And they didn't follow God's command, like David talked about.
Right.
They followed God's commanders then to totally wipe out goats, sheep, dogs, everything. But they didn't do that. And so they're dealing with their failures right now. And that's a tough thing to live with, to swallow, believe it. Yeah, wipe out dogs, children, cats, everything. Wipe them out, what he said. And, I don't know.
Well, you sounded like you did.
No. I don't have an answer to that. I know that it's causing problems because they didn't, but, yeah.
I have a problem with going and wiping out all the innocent women, children, and
cats and dogs.
And cats and dogs.
Reading Hosea this week, one of the verses said, talking about the babies and the women that could destroy them.
Yeah. Yeah, this is not one of those 15 second snippets on the news. I mean, this is the type of thing that requires a little bit more depth of understanding, right? In that regard. When even Jesus talked about following what is Caesar's, give to Caesar what is Caesar's. And that's, you remember, there was a story in Matthew, he tells Peter, go and eat the first fish you catch, take the coin that's out of the mouth of the fish and give that for your taxes, that kind of a thing. So Jesus wasn't preaching to go against the rule. That's not what he was preaching. But he was preaching in terms of loving God more. And in those regards, we may have to decide to do something a little bit against the rule. And that's why this pastor up in Canada was talking. I won't share the whole article with you, but he details several pastors in Canada who are in jail right now because they defied the order of meeting as churches during the COVID time. And some of we caught, I think there were a couple of those that were picked out and shared with.
There are people that are like Satan. They would destroy Christianity.
Yeah.
And unless you're willing to put up a fight,
yeah,
then you're going to get, they'll wipe us off.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm gonna kind of clean up with that later today. That's great you brought that up. If you remember also, one of the things that Mark hit, looking back to Exodus, go back to Exodus 5. And I don't want to make too much of this, but I think it's, number one, other than what Mark has already done, which he did a great job. But it did dawn on me that the Hebrews have been in Egypt for 300 plus years, almost 400 years. And that they teach history in Egyptian school. And this Pharaoh would have been brought up with the most history. So either they wrote the history out of it about Joseph and all the other things that were there. By this time, the Jews, the Hebrews that were in Egypt, were strictly there as slaves. That's really all they were there for. So Pharaoh says in chapter, someone read verse 2 of chapter 5.
Pharaoh said, "Who is the Lord that I should obey him and let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, and I will not let Israel go."
Yeah. Man, how powerful or ignorant do you need to be, maybe both, to say something like that? As I was doing studying, here's what one theologian wrote. He said, to that question, why should I obey the Lord? His response is, this was a reasonable question because the Egyptian people considered Pharaoh to be a god. And why should their god obey a strange god that neither Pharaoh nor the Egyptians knew? Furthermore, what right did this new god have to call the Israelites my people when the Jews were the slaves of Pharaoh? If Pharaoh obeyed the edict, he would be acknowledging a deity greater than himself. And he wasn't about to do that. In his pride and false security, Pharaoh wouldn't listen to the words of the living God. Goes on to say, Moses mentioned that the Israelites might be in danger of being killed if they failed to obey the Lord. Did you realize that before Mark brought that out? Look back in chapter 5. Pharaoh says, who is the Lord that I should obey his voice and let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, and moreover, I will not let Israel go. Then they said, I'm assuming that's Moses and Aaron. Then they said, the God of the Hebrews has met with us. please let us go a 3 days journey into the wilderness that we may sacrifice to the Lord our God. Here's what you need to catch if you didn't. A lot of people won't catch it. Lest he fall upon us with pestilence or with the sword. But the king of Egypt said to them, Moses and Aaron, why do you take the people away from their work? Go get back to your burdens. And Pharaoh said, behold, the people of the land are many, and you make them rest from their burdens. The same day Pharaoh commanded the taskmasters of the people and their foremen, you shall no longer give the people straw to make bricks as in the past. Let them go and gather straw for themselves, right? But the brick amounts had to be produced in the same amounts. I wanted to share that with you because we often miss that. We come back, he comes back, and he says, I don't even know the Lord. But then Moses says, and there's different translations out there, Moses actually says, look, let us go, or so we may sacrifice, lest he, meaning God, fall upon us with the pestilence or with the sword. I like what this theologian wrote. Says, perhaps Moses was hinting that Pharaoh's stubbornness might cost him his slaves and that he'd be better off to give the Jews a week off and thereby protect his cheap labor. However, there's another factor involved. Moses was telling Pharaoh that the God of the Hebrews was a powerful God who could kill the Egyptians as well as the Jews. Pharaoh needed to understand that the demands Moses and Aaron were making were not to be taken lightly, for this was a matter of life and death. So in essence, Moses is communicating to Pharaoh, if you don't let the people go, there's a really good chance. I mean, you're testing God, who will come down and not only strike us dead, in essence, strike down your employment ranks from that standpoint, too. I thought that was kind of an interesting insight. I hadn't thought of it that way.
Interesting, if my reference back to chapter 3,
yep.
Verse 18, and God speaks to Moses. He didn't say he's going to punish them if they don't go. Moses kind of adds that in
there. I'm just wondering. That's a good insight. Yep. The Lord, the God of the Hebrews, has met with us, and now please let us go 3 days' journey into the wilderness that we may sacrifice to the Lord. But I know that the king of Egypt will not let you go unless compelled by a mighty hand. Maybe that was the communication God gave him. I don't know. It's a good point. That's a good point. Don.
One question. Am I wrong to think there's several billion people in the world that are saying that same verse?
That
why should I believe God? Why, who is the Lord that I should listen to him?
Well, I think every non-believer probably says that.
Absolutely.
Either mentally or articulate it that way. Yeah, I agree.
That's a lot of pharaohs out there.
There's more than you think.
Yeah. I mean, I understand missions, but I understand remnants of people. But go ahead. I was just... this is a crazy time, and it's really embarrassing to see our country where it's at, divided, and why there's so many. I don't care what the Lord said. Who's the Lord?
Yeah.
Not my Lord.
Yeah, I heard one of the mothers interviewed this morning that her son went over and was at, I think he was at the music festival was going on, and I think when someone last saw him, he'd had... There was a picture of the young man. Maybe you saw it. He had like a cast on one arm, the right arm or left arm. I can't remember now. But anyway, the last time that someone saw them, the report was he was missing from the elbow down. So who knows what happened. And then his cell phone went off a couple times, but then she hasn't seen him. So she's over there. She was very adamant that this, you know, both Democrat and Republicans have been very, very helpful in terms of talking with them. She goes, we don't see it, Democrat or Republican. This is humankind that they're taking on now. And she said, if we squabble basically about the political areas we're in, so we're all doomed in that sense. You know, one thing that was interesting, Mark did a great job of lining out, and I think he's actually preached on these 10 areas of Egypt or of Moses. The plagues and all that. But I wanted to read something too I thought was interesting because it does reflect in the first plague all the way to the 10th one, which was the taking of the kids. The longer Pharaoh resisted God, the more serious the judgments became. The first three plagues were distressful: water to blood, frogs, and then gnats. The second three were painful and costly: flies, death of the livestock, and then boils. And the last four were dangerous and destructive: hail, locust, darkness, and the death of the firstborn. And it was interesting. And I, you know, can anyone see any how relative that is even for us today? For people who don't accept Christ early and move on through their life without believing? What I guess where I'm going at is it seems to me that sometimes they pay a higher penalty the older they get. You know, the guy or the gal that gets married to an unbeliever, they're both unbelievers, and they have marital problems, and then that leads to certain things. And sometimes they wind up spending money they shouldn't have been spending, and that creates another set of problems. Not that Christians can't go through the same thing, I guess. But I guess the point is, when people put off accepting Christ, the longer they put it off, the harder it is for them to sometimes seems like to accept Christ. And that's why, you know, I most of you have heard this before. The older you get, the harder it is to accept Christ. Why do you think that statement is out there?
I think fear.
Fear?
I think fear.
Why fear?
I think people are afraid to accept something that they really don't understand.
Right. Okay.
And also, Brad, I mean, or are they going to accept that they've been wrong for the last 60 years?
Yeah.
And there's guilt.
That's right.
Maybe.
Pride.
Bob? Pride?
Yeah.
Dave?
I think when you talk about all the people that are not Christians as being unbelievers, I think that's kind of a misconception, because I believe there's a majority out there that it's not that I don't believe, it's just I'm so wrapped up in all of the things I'm doing, I don't even want to mess with that right now because I don't need it.
Or I don't have time.
Maybe I need to do that sometime and talk about it. But there's another issue that I think is important. We're talking about Donald Trump, about disappointment in what's happening in our country. You got to understand, at the university where I am, over 60% of the students are not U.S. citizens. They come from other countries.
I was hoping you were going to bring that up.
Almost 70% of the faculty came from other countries. I mean, we have 57 Cajun faculty in my department, and I only know of three that grew up in the United States. I mean, when I go to a faculty meeting, I can't even understand what they're saying. I mean, and it's the reality of what's happened,
right?
Because of what has come into this country and the way things have been done.
Yeah.
And so it's disappointing that you realize we're not even, most of these probably aren't even U.S. citizens. There are people from the other countries that you're seeing.
I don't understand the multitude of riots in the U.S. And all those rioters, when I see them, they want Israel dead.
Right.
All of them. They're wanting to support Palestinians. And I have no problem with supporting Palestinians. But
the people.
The people.
Right.
Malcolm said last week, said something about, we'll see what the Palestinian government does.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
And they did nothing.
They didn't do anything.
They did that. No Arab nation. No. Let's get back to the United States.
Desert.
those rioters, they don't live in the desert. I can't understand that. I do not for the life of me. Jews are different than I am. That's for sure. They believe a different way, but they have every right to believe that way. But the Quran teaches something.
Let's get back to the scriptures here, because no, and not just because of that, but because Pharaoh is exactly, this is what Mark has talked about. Pharaoh does give an incredible example for us to follow, not to follow, but to see and observe what takes place. I think, you know, to your point, David, you know, I think you know, we, I think as you get older, you do acquire things, you get more involved, you all, you know, whether it's physical stuff or grandkids or just your work and pursuits and all that kind of stuff. One of the things that Mark made a reference in his sermon to One More Night with the Frogs, a sermon that was that title, and I did a little research, if that's okay. And I wanted to take a little bit from a sermon that was preached underneath that title. It was kind of interesting. It was written by a gal who was from lives in Australia. She actually wrote something that was interesting, and I thought it was interesting. Anyway, she says she must have been visiting in Fredericksburg, Virginia, because she says, as you know, what I am not here tonight in Fredericksburg, Virginia, to ask why Pharaoh, all of those years ago, wanted to spend one more night with his frogs. My question is, what are the frogs that are in you, or on you, or around you, that you've been carrying for years? And God says, I'm willing to get rid of those frogs. I'm able to get rid of those frogs. I'm wanting to get all those frogs in you to come and sit, and you sit in church, and you hear sermon after sermon, and you go, you know what? I'm going to do that, but I'm going to do it tomorrow. And God says, this is not the time for tomorrow. The hour is urgent. The day is urgent. Today is the day, of salvation. Today is the day of deliverance. Today is the day of freedom. You don't need to wait one more night to get rid of those frogs. It is so amazing to me. I've thought about this so often in my life. What is it that would make a Christian want to spend one more night with a frog? Well, I don't know what your frogs are. We get so used to them, the frogs of bitterness, the frogs of unforgiveness, the frogs of anger, the frogs of lust, the frogs of addiction, the frogs of greed, the frogs of insecurity, the frogs of shame, the frogs of lust, the frogs of apathy, the frogs of indifference. I mean, you just insert what it is, and we just do laps around the same old mountain, and we come here, and we hear a sermon week in and week out, and we think, yes, I need to do what Pastor Mark says. I added Mark. And I'm going to do it, but I'll do it tomorrow. And we think because we intend to do it tomorrow that we've actually done something about it today. And then we wake up tomorrow, and we're still in that same old place, and you go, why do I have that same old depression? That same old anger, that same old insecurity, that same old addiction, that same old lust, that same old greed, that same old bitterness, that same old forgiveness. Why is nothing changing? I thought that was pretty interesting. I mean, that comes from something that Mark brought out. I had never heard that sermon before, so it was interesting to hear it. And actually, she was sharing a testimony, and she gave that at a church in Fredericksburg. I thought it was hilarious. Well, let me come down to toward the end here. In the end, Mark makes a comment that I thought was interesting, and you may have, I don't know if you've caught this or not. People who are suffering need the assurance of God, not a false, why are you punishing me? I can say with confidence, God, I know that no matter what happens, you'll be at work in my life and you'll redeem every situation. And I know you will not stop loving me, and you will fulfill every promise you've made to me. I know I'm your treasure, and you prove it by the cross. God does judge sin, and my sin was judged on the cross. One of the things that I thought might be interesting, I kind of want to share with you as we start closing out, is how is Pharaoh impacting us today? Now, obviously, Pharaoh is kind of metaphor for Satan. I wanted to share four things with you that I found that I thought was interesting. First of all, Pharaoh, and you could put in there Satan, does not want you to leave his employment. Pharaoh said in Exodus 5:2, "Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? I know not the Lord, neither will I let Israel go." Pharaoh wants you to work for him until you're dead. He wants you to live in sin all your life. He will tell you that you still got plenty of time to repent, plenty of time to serve God. Have any of you ever read C.S. Lewis's book about the senior devil teaching the junior devil? And Bob, you remember that? Yeah, the Screw Tape Letters. If you haven't read that or listened to it, you ought to do that. I pull that out about every 5 or 6 years and kind of reread through it and stuff, and actually taught a Bible study one time on that. Well, you're talking about laughing, crying, and serious moments. That book delivers all of those things. If Satan knows he can't get your salvation because you accepted Christ, then he'll do everything he can to keep you completely off focus. Off focus. Focusing on cool stuff. Second stage that this particular writer wrote on, I thought was interesting. Pharaoh will allow you to serve God. Here's the good one. Pharaoh will allow you to serve God, but wants you to remain with him. Exodus 8:25. And Pharaoh called for Moses and for Aaron and said, "Go ye, sacrifice to your, but remain, God in the land." Go sacrifice to your God, but I want you to come and back. He didn't really want them to leave. But if you're going to leave, leave, but then come. In this next stage, Pharaoh yields to some pressure. He agrees that you should serve God, but you must remain in Egypt building his pyramids. Here, Satan allows you to serve God, but only on your spare time. Yet he makes sure that you hardly find some. Pharaoh will prescribe when you can go to church, when you cannot. That's why it's difficult to attend church any other day save for Sundays. Interesting thought. Third stage. Pharaoh does not want you to go too far. Exodus 8:28, and Pharaoh said, "I will let you go that you may sacrifice to the Lord your God in the wilderness, only you shall not go very far away." In this stage, you're warned not to go too far with God and the ministry. You will be discouraged to give or serve above what is seen as normal. And then the fourth stage. Pharaoh does not want you to risk your finances in ministry. Oh boy, now it's getting close to the kitchen, isn't it? And Pharaoh called, this is Exodus 10:24. And Pharaoh called unto Moses and said, "Go, serve the Lord, only let your flocks and your herds be stay here. Let your little ones also go with you." This is probably the hardest stage. People are ready to do almost anything for the church as long as it doesn't involve giving their hard-earned money. That's why the most disliked time in church is the time of offerings and tithes. Satan will follow, knows that a bankrupt church is a stagnant church, and he will discourage church members from giving and fight the finances of those that have a heart to sacrifice for the work of God. Thought that was kind of interesting how subtle. And that book, the Screwtape Letters, will certainly get you on that. The last thing I wanted us to look at is if you look at the passages from 5 through, what is it, through 10 or 11, before they're finally out of there, the Passover of chapter 12, time and time again he gives, exactly as Mark pointed out, he gives Pharaoh the chance to apologize, to ask for forgiveness, to seek forgiveness, and to correct the situation. He never does. In fact, we read in the Bible he was part of his army that went underneath the Red Sea. He was the one that died for that. That's how. And I still can't imagine how you'd have to catch your attention if your child was threatened to be dead. I didn't understand that one. The first nine, I can almost, not that I don't understand those either, but the last one, when it gets so close that you'd actually allow your child to potentially be killed, that makes no sense to me in that regard. Questions, comments, any other thoughts, comments?
Moses had already gone through that.
Though. Yeah.
When he was told to take his firstborn son up on the mount and kill him.
That was Abraham.
I'm sorry, Abraham.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
There's all kinds of things like that through the Bible. Peter denied Christ 3 times. Are we doing the same thing? Is he going to take a cock to crow to make us realize that we're not accepting Christ the way we should be?
Yeah. One last question I had for you. I wrote this down last night as I was thinking through maybe a way to close out a little bit. How many of you have known of an individual in their 60s or 70s or even 80s that accepted Christ? Does anyone know anyone that age that came to know the Lord that old?
Brother.
Your brother? What did it take, Jim?
Probably a relationship that actually ended up after he became Christian, but I think his ex-wife gave him an ultimatum, and either you straighten up, and then he, and then I think the testimony of a I guess a first cousin who also came to know Christ later in life, became a real warrior, and he heard that testimony in church, and I think that really affected my brother.
Yeah. Vern, did you have your hand up?
My grandfather, on my mother's side, was in his 80s when he finally was saved. Had a brush arm revival.
Bob, you had, I thought you put your hand up.
Well, there was a guy here in Granbury that was a friend of one of the people that came to a Bible study over at Lowell London. And he had some very severe problems, and people have been talking to him, trying to get him to come to the Lord. And I asked him to give me a chance, and I wanted to talk to him as well. And he did. He came to know the Lord. And he also was cured somewhat of his liver problem. He was on a list for a transplant. And he looked like death warmed over. But later on, he came up to me here at church. He was going to church.
Wow.
And he looked like a whole completely different person.
Yeah.
But it
happens. Yeah, it does.
I have relatives, too, that have, you know, waited that long, but not been able to see for that length of time. And
yeah.
Finally, they do come to understand it.
Yeah. I think one thing, and maybe let you leave with this thought, one thing that I was impressed with Mark's bringing this out is how much of a forgiving God and a God that wants to forgive us, even with the hardest, I mean, with a Hitler. You know, it makes you wonder, would he have forgiven Hitler? Well, we know in the power of God, God can forgive anybody, right? And I think it was certainly for Moses, but for the Hebrew people, and they didn't know necessarily all the things that maybe Moses talked about it after they left. I don't know, but it there seems to me like Moses and Aaron had a first row seat to over and over again seeing God doing what He said He would do, and then being able to forgive somebody. And I guess the last point for us today is, do we do that with people that we have living next door to us, or that we have relatives that are in that situation? That's a tough one, and I think it does get tougher. And I think, you know, Dave, you said because maybe we just got so many things going on, and it is amazing. You when you get close to retirement or in retirement age, I've heard some of you tell me the same thing. Man, I thought I was going to get all kinds of time. I ain't got no time. You know, it's like we're busy. It's busier now than we've ever been, and that. Satan loves to have us involved and busy with all kinds of stuff to take our eyes and take our focus and really break our communion with God from a daily, you know, quiet time and those kind of things. All right, I'll give anyone last thought. Any comments? Yeah.
Where's the wisdom from Scout this morning? The young lady.
Yeah.
That was awesome, wasn't it?
She was sharp.
Good for her. Yeah, good for her. Well, let's close out with a word of prayer. Father God, we thank You for Your love. We thank You that You... You do what You say You're going to do. Father, this passage in Exodus, I mean, it's just black and white clear on what kind of leader, what kind of man that this particular Pharaoh was. And not real sure whether the others were any better, but Father, instead of just picking on him, Father, we need to be looking at our own selves, our own eyes, and look in the mirror at ourselves and find out how many times have we sort of said we were going to do something and then just didn't follow up with it or didn't take it seriously. Father, you're loving. You really don't want people to die. But Father, you're willing to also administer Your justice. Father, I see what's going on in Israel, and we have all kinds of questions, and we see protesters, and we just don't – how could people come to such conclusions after what they've seen happening, and in a very microscopic way, Father, we may be seeing what it might have been like back in the 30s and early 40s with the Jewish people in Germany and Poland and Russia and other countries of Europe. Father, help us not to grow bitter and angry, certainly with you, but certainly with others. Father, let us continue to pray, knowing that you deliver your justice in your timing. Father, give us the spirit to want to love others that may not be loving. And that's hard for me. That's a hard one. Especially when you've been wronged by another individual. It's a tough one to deal with. But Father, you are, if we believe that you're the great God of creation, you're also the God of miracles, and we ask you for that. Thank you for your love for us this morning. We ask all those here, Father, follow you and spend time with you this week. We ask all this in your name. Amen.